Hi, this is Tracy Rowe with Spiritual Not Religious. Thanks for listening. Today I'm going to talk about archetypes. So I hear people use the term archetype, and it's a really complex concept. So I thought I would just talk a bit about it. Why is it even a relevant concept to explore? I think it is relevant. I think it can be very helpful, but it has a lot of paradoxical aspects. So I want to talk about it. So this is just one take. I'm not the last word on archetypes, but here's a particular perspective that might be helpful. So an archetype is what we might call a collective symbol. But like all symbols, it is pointing to something that is real. But the symbol makes it possible for us to begin the process of understanding something that is likely beyond symbolism and, you know, beyond our limited linear ability to comprehend universal truths. So an archetype is a collective symbol that references a real phenomena in the cosmos itself, or as it is manifest in the psyche, which is the microcosm of the ultimate cosmos. So examples, for instance, in a previous episode, I was somewhat glib in referring to ideas of Zeus and Thor as being the archetypes that were sometimes most related to some folks' conception of God, of the ultimate supreme consciousness, which people often refer to as God. And when I was talking about that, I wasn't suggesting that the ultimate consciousness of the universe, or the supreme consciousness of the universe, sometimes known as God, is merely a symbol or an archetype. I was saying that when people focus on a particular aspect of the all that is and attribute to that one aspect all of the characteristics of the all that is, that's problematic. So I wasn't suggesting that the God concept is inherently irrelevant, but rather that the word God is often evocative of ideas such as a very limited, judgmental, frequently male being who is somewhat capricious and judgmental and punitive. So let's go back for a moment to what I mean by a collective symbol. When I say collective, I'm referring to the overall collective of all consciousness that is sometimes referred to as collective consciousness. So when I say the collective, I mean it is a symbol that is not just a personal symbol. For instance, a personal symbol might be my grandmother's tablecloth was green. I liked my grandmother. So when I see green, it reminds me of my grandmother. So green is symbolic of my grandmother, or of feeling happy being with my grandmother. So that would be a way of thinking of a personal symbol. A collective symbol is a symbol that shows up in many cultures over centuries and shows up in dreams and is something that represents a universal principle, and it shows up in a lot of different areas concurrently. And Jung and Joseph Campbell talked about these ideas and popularized them And those would be, those archetypes are things like the warrior archetype or the goddess or the earth mother or the crone or the magician, or those kinds of big concepts that might be called a different thing and might be dressed up a little differently in different cultures, but that show up in different cultures because they are representative of real aspects of total consciousness in a more, in a deeper and broader sense than a personal symbol is. So that's a way of thinking about an archetype. An archetype is a collective symbol. And just like the green, the symbolism of, you know, the green in the tablecloth reminding me of a happy time with a grandmother, let's say, that is pointing to a real thing. But green in and of itself isn't that thing. Green is a personal symbol that might evoke that. In the same way, in archetypes, they are pointing to real phenomena, either in the individual psyche or general, the way that we interact with the all that is, and the way that, and the many aspects of the way that we interact with the all that is. We here in time and space are constricted in our ability to think about a whole thing, a oneness, an infinite consciousness. So we then understand it, you might say, in bits and pieces. And we then identify with certain bits of and pieces of that, and not so much with others. So that's where the inherent difficulty comes in, is that we here in time and space, subject to linear thinking as one of the main ways that we understand ourselves and our world, we are limited in our ability to think of the whole. So we think of one aspect of the whole and then attribute to that aspect the qualities of the whole. And that is problematic if we identify with a particular archetype that is really more a reflection of our own ego tendencies to judge and separate and criticize and deny than it is of a totality of pure, compassionate consciousness, which is, I think, a closer idea of what might be considered God, is a universal infinite consciousness that is really beyond the ego's limitations of judgment and separation and punishment and those sorts of things. Our egos really want often to believe that God is wanting to punish people, because we want to punish people and we want to judge people, so we want to believe that God is judgmental, and so we impose upon the all that is sometimes our most debased human impulses, and that's where it becomes problematic. So that's sort of a starting point of thinking about archetypes. So then, how are archetypes useful? And are they useful? I think they are only useful if we realize that they are archetypes, in that they are pointing to truths, either in ourselves individually or in the collective, but they are not the thing itself. And when we, again, if we attach ourselves, we basically project our own sometimes most debased impulses onto
the supreme, our conception of a supreme being, then we are essentially justifying our most debased impulses as being universal truths, when in fact they are contrary to the wholeness that is the all that is. On the other hand, they can be very useful in understanding ourselves. When you think about which archetypes you are drawn to, it is a good signal of what it is that is up in front of you at this time to learn. If you, for instance, are currently very attracted to the classic feminine archetypes, such as Kali, the creator and destroyer, that may be a sign to you that you're wanting to explore your own sense of power in the feminine aspect. Or maybe if you're attracted to the more nurturing goddess imagery, it may be that you're wanting to develop those aspects in yourself. Furthermore, if you want to develop those aspects in yourself, it makes sense to spend time thinking and exploring and meditating in whatever way works for you on those archetypes, and consider that just as with anything, those qualities are not really external to you. They are yours, but perhaps in a somewhat more latent state. And it can be very useful to explore those qualities, perhaps by having some statuary about that archetype, and do some meditating and appreciating of those qualities. I think what's most important, though, is that you recognize that what you're doing in that is you're giving honor to those qualities in yourself toward the goal of helping them to manifest themselves. The ego wants you to believe that if something is inside of you already, it must not be very valuable. And that is part of the impulse to want to focus your attention of worship outside yourself, as if it is something entirely separate from you, and that you are reaching out, chasing it down, trying to connect with it, rather than looking within, because the ego says, well, if you already have it, it must not be very valuable, and only things that are valuable are outside of you, so you have to go capture them and somehow gain their favor. And that is really the problematic aspect. That's the most problematic aspect. There's the two problems are, as I've said, one is projecting our own most unpleasant qualities onto our conception of God, and then wanting our God as the all-powerful to do our bidding and, you know, basically punish our enemies or punish the wicked, as it were. And that's very, it's just this one of the most kind of distasteful things to me, frankly, if I'm completely honest, because the supreme consciousness of all that is not sitting around wanting to do your bidding for you and, you know, basically manifesting your impulses to punish and destroy. That just doesn't make sense. But the part of you that realizes that there is something really unsavory about those impulses is comforted temporarily by the idea that there is a God that is going to take care of all of that for you. And I say it's comforting temporarily because as you believe that, that's what the supreme, all-powerful consciousness of the universe is going to do to other people, you naturally realize that one way or another, you're next. So it puts you in a state of fear, and you operate from that state of fear that you will make a mistake and be punished. And you will punish yourself for your mistakes, or life will punish you, it is true. But it's not the ultimate goal of pure compassion that any of us are punished, but rather
that through our experiences and the feedback that we get from our actions, we might move toward a better way of doing things, that we might become more loving, because the natural consequences of being more loving will in fact feel better. They'll not only feel better, but they'll have better results. At a certain point, it's helpful to give up the need to have to relearn and relearn and relearn that lesson, but we continue to practice our errors as long as it takes, I guess. But just because we are practicing our errors, that's why I find it particularly distasteful that we waste time imagining that the supreme consciousness of all that is also practicing our errors for us and doing it with the mighty hand of you know, lightning bolts and eternal damnation and all sorts of things that just don't make sense. And I know that that's something people want to believe in for some reason. Sometimes they want to believe that their enemies will be punished for all eternity. I recently heard a parable or a story about a man was talking to a teacher, a monk of some sort, I suspect, and was saying that he wanted people who sinned to, you know, be punished for all eternity, and that he knew that God would do that, that God would punish them for all eternity. And the monk said, "Do you have any children?" And he said, "Yes, I have a son." He said, "Does your son ever make any mistakes?" And the man said, "Yes, he comes home drunk sometimes." And he's argumentative. And the monk said, "Well, the next time he comes home drunk, turn your oven up as high as it will go and stick his head in that oven and keep it there forever." And the man said, "I would never do that. I love my son." And the monk said, "But you think that God would do that?" So I think that's an excellent illustration of how odd it is that we imagine that on the one hand people will say God is love, and in the same breath they'll imagine that this being of perfect love is capable of punishing those he loves for their mistakes with eternal damnation. And that's also an excellent illustration of the ways in which we
have a very strange conception of what the supreme being of the universe would be capable of. That the supreme love of the universe would be capable of atrocities that we ourselves would never even imagine. And that also shows why people are afraid of God. So that's all pointing somewhat to the reason why I say I don't always like to use the word God, because for many, many people, all of that we've just been discussing, all of that is what is triggered for them when they hear the word God. And even if they say they are worshiping God or that they love God, if they believe that God is capable of such atrocities, I wonder if they love God or are just afraid. I think to really love all that is, we cannot also be simultaneously afraid of it. And I think there's really no reason to be afraid, because all the punishment that we create is really created by us. We do it to ourselves and to each other. So that's, I think, going to be my episode for today. And I think we'll talk more about archetypes and fear in the near future. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. I'd love to hear questions or comments. I'll put the link for the questions or comments somewhere I hope that you can find. And again, this is Tracy Rowe. My website is Greater Mind Integration. I'm a greatermindintegration.com, and I am a licensed clinical professional counselor, a Reiki master teacher, and just a regular gal on the journey of life, hoping to meet my like-minded folks. And thanks so much for everybody who listened.